to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And yeah, I just noticed your thing on Zencaster. What does it say? John Cena?
Yes. John Connor.
John
Connor. Yes. Yes, the leader of the resistance and the one true hope to save the future.
Yeah, but you know, that's not always the... He fucking dies, man. So I don't know.
He does. He does die, technically. I mean, Dark Fate was a... Technically the second sequel, and you know, yeah, and he dies. So yeah, that sucks. And he dies, you know, before he's able to lead the resistance. So that sucks.
That's not the best name to go by.
Yeah, I guess not.
but yeah, man, here we are, recording a new episode, and, you're a bit far away for once.
Yeah, a bit far away, man. Down here in not too far away from a historic piece of Texas land. So about 28 miles down, there's the memorial of Fort Velasco, and it was the first battle area for the fight over Texas between the Mexicans, who had just gained independence from Spain, and the Texians, who were trying to secure Texas for themselves. So pretty cool. They won the battle. Texians won the battle because Mexicans ran out of ammo. They're a little far from home, ran out of ammunition, couldn't fight very well after that. And they actually had a historical thing where they shot off some muskets and stuff. And I wasn't there for it, but I found out about it and I thought it was pretty darn cool. So yeah, down here in good old city of Galveston, where Glenn Campbell sang a pretty little song about it. So cool stuff.
Wow. The Glenn Campbell reference.
Yes. The great that Glenn Campbell.
Came out of absolutely nowhere, but sure. yeah, man, it's we're a few days from the 4th of July in America. So, you know, it's people are prepping up for that, even though down here in Tejas, it's hot as F, man. It's,
hell yeah, dude. Even,
why would I want to do anything outside unless it's by a pool or a beach or,
yeah,
or something, man? It's like, it's too damn hot to barbecue or to do fireworks or any of that. And
for real, man,
it's like, nah, no thanks. I mean, I'm gonna work anyway, so it doesn't matter to me. It's like no
real same plans. Here I'm, yeah, I'm working as well.
Invade my brother's pool possibly, but you know,
there we go. You will claim his land in the name of Mark.
That's right.
Yes.
And with that, it is Tom Cruise's birthday on July 3rd, and we always it's kind of been an unplanned running gag over the last few years where we'll shout out, happy birthday, Tom Cruise, or something.
Happy birthday, Cruise.
I know we've done some Cruise movies around his birthday. I think Top Gun 1 year and a couple other ones. And, and it is kind of by design and kind of just became an accidental thing around the 4th of July to celebrate some Tom Cruise, you know, and we've said it before on the show, you know, you can hate on him for his, you know, scientific religion beliefs or whatever, but the guy is flat out entertains people, man. That's what he does. You know, he makes entertaining films and entertaining movies. And the one we're talking today is going to be fun to talk about because it's highly entertaining. And, so happy birthday, man. And the dude is going to be 61, man.
Yeah. 61. He's still doing his own stunts. He's still hanging out of friggin' airplanes, yeah, and just, you know, doing death defying stunts in order to please us, his fans.
Flat out entertaining, and I think he's done a good job of changing his reputation over the last few years. It's just everyone who talks about him says he's a super nice guy. The way he treats people, the way he treats people on set, he looks out for people. You know, he befriends people. He takes on young actors and teaches them. You know, Miles Teller had great things to say about him on the set of Top Gun Maverick and a lot of the other young people that have worked with him. And, you know, he's one of our great movie stars of our generation, for sure.
Definitely, man. I mean, everything he does, he's going to put his all into it, literally, you know, his safety, his well-being, and he's going to, you know, he's going to bring it every single chance he gets.
Yeah. I mean, the guy, he claims to this day, he still watches one movie every day. He studies his craft. I mean, this past week, he was seen a couple nights ago. He went to a theater to see Indiana Jones for a screen, you know, and he posted some pictures of going to see the film. And you know, he's a big supporter of the Flash movie we did last week and talked about how much he loves it. The dude loves cinema. He loves entertaining people. And we're going to talk about him some today and some Tom Cruise and happy birthday to him and talk Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol here in just a little bit. Tom Cruise.
Tom fucking Cruise, you know, baby.
We'll talk some more in a little bit. I want to talk the whole opening about Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I start realizing sometimes that he's probably one of my favorite actors, you know, because I always know he's going to bring it. So.
Yeah, man. And no matter what he does, he can do a lot of stuff, I feel like, you know, from his Jerry Maguire stuff to his Mission Impossible.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire is great. But before we get to that, let's talk about some things we watched this week and talk some news, and we'll get to some Tom Cruise business here in just a little bit. I watched the Stan Lee documentary that's on Disney Plus, and it's okay. I was expecting more from Disney. A lot of their making of specials have been on Disney Plus, and some of the documentaries have been out so far have been really good. But this one was, man, I think the one that was A&E or somebody did a few years ago was better. And this uses some of the A&E footage. It's kind of a weird blend of documentary, mockumentary, and fakeumentary. I mean, they use like this animation to tell some of the stories as he was when he was a kid. They use some mockumentary voiceovers from a guy who's a Stanley sound-alike, mixed in with a lot of real footage. And there's nothing new in this that we didn't already know about Stan Lee or about how Marvel Comics came around and how he got his rise to fame. But it's an interesting watch. I just expected to be a lot better from Disney. Because they had hyped this up for about a year now that they were working on it, and then they dropped it. And I'm like, oh, that's it? You know? I just feel like, they've owned Marvel for, 15 years now or whatever it is since Disney bought them. It just feels like they could have done a little better paying respects to the man that created our childhood, you know? And it's not a terrible documentary, but I just wanted it to be better than it was. It's okay. But for people that don't know a lot about Stan Lee, it's a great watch. You know, they'll get a lot of information from it. They'll learn a lot about how he came up with some of these characters and how Marvel got started. And so I don't want to turn anybody off from watching that doesn't know anything about Stan Lee. For me, it just didn't give any new information, and I was just hoping a little bit more behind the scenes stuff than they gave. It's a very cut and dry by the numbers. This is when he got a start. This is when he joined Marvel. This is when he did this. I mean, you know, standard documentary form. So.
Yeah, I guess the documentaries just haven't been, you know, super strong lately. I watched some of the Arnold one on Netflix, and there's no juice in it, you know. It's cool looking into his now daily life, which is primarily what it is. But you know, there's no, you know, hey, whenever I was filming Conan or back in the day, hey, yeah, whenever I was doing Red Heat, you know, and no juicy stuff, man, nothing like that. And maybe it's the times. Maybe he's just afraid to, you know, kind of show that side of him that he was. Maybe he's afraid that, you know, people will turn on him, but, you know, it was okay.
But then you got ESPN out there doing really great stuff. Like The Last Dance was fantastic, and people got a little mad at Michael for telling some behind the scenes stuff about how the Bulls worked and how competitive he was. But in the end of the day, it got a lot of attention and a lot more publicity for those players that will play with Michael and all that. And so, you know, so maybe sometimes that's good to let out the juice, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, at least you get some insight. Yeah. I still need to watch it, but you know, I've heard good things about it. And every once in a while, on social media, I see some clips pop up from it. Yeah. You know, your phone listens to you if you talk, you know, I think whenever I was talking about how I saw Air, I think I started getting suggestions for that. And I started seeing Nike clips. Yeah. by Jordans. And then, I started seeing historical clips of Jordan come across, and I was like, yeah, I was wondering if that's from that documentary. I forgot what it was called, but okay. Last Dance. And it came out on ESPN Plus app
it's on Netflix now. Yeah.
Netflix. Nice, man. Yeah. I wanted to see Extraction too, but I just didn't get the chance to do it. I was outside, catching crabs.
I haven't finished it. I got about 30 minutes in, and well, I was just too tired, honestly. I couldn't keep my eyes open, and so I was like, okay, I need to go back and get and finish it. So I did start it, but I haven't watched it all the way through yet. But did you ever watch the first one? I thought you hadn't seen the first one.
I hadn't seen the first one, but, you know, I would have rather worked myself back just so I could say, hey, you know, I saw Extraction 2, and then
I'd watch the first one first. Because the way this one starts out, you're going to be lost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd watch the first one first.
Oh, okay, maybe it's a good thing I didn't then. You gave me a little piece of advice.
Other than the Stan Lee documentary, I did, I mean, it's not the movie we're talking about. I went ahead after watching Ghost Protocol, and I watched Rogue Nation again. And I'm going to try to watch Fallout before Dead Reckoning comes out, just so I can be fully refreshed, you know, going
into Dead Reckoning. Yes, 100% caught up.
And Rogue Nation is fantastic as well. I mean, you know, and there's a kind of a pattern I noticed the Mission Impossible movies that we'll talk about when we get to Ghost Protocol. And I never occurred how different the six movies are so far, but also how they do have some real similarities that I guess they're themed on purpose for the Mission Impossible movies. But we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But anything else you watched this week?
No, I, you know, rewatched some stuff, but you know, nothing crazy.
Yeah. Same here, man. Nothing really crazy. I did watch another episode of The Bad Batch. I'm trying to finish season two, and get that done before season three comes out. And, didn't see anything else. I'm searching. There's just not there hasn't been a lot hit the last week or two since Creed 3 hit the platforms and stuff, and Avatar Way of Water. It's like I'm waiting for something else to kind of
screen.
Hit. I need to watch Secret Invasion. I just haven't watched it yet.
A couple of things, a couple movies have hit the IMDb's number one rated horror movie for the year. Evil Dead Rise is now on HBO. It's Max. It's creepy, man. I think it's a good horror film.
That reminds me.
Yeah.
I did watch Batman the Doom that came to Gotham.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good. You know, considering these latest DC animated films haven't been all that, really. You know, they've been okay. We've talked about this, but this one's pretty decent. Mm-hmm. It's still not great, but it's good. I think it works because it's an Elseworlds tale.
Okay.
It's Batman like in the 1920s, and it's like almost like a steampunkish type thing, and Oliver Queen's in there and everything. And it's pretty nice. It's interesting. It's not bad.
Kind of like Batman Samurai.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like in that kind of vein, kind of a different type of world. And so it's not bad. Yeah, I forgot I did watch that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out. I saw it, and I was like, I wonder if it's any good. And I just haven't gotten to it.
Yeah, because it just hit HBO Max the other day as well. And I think that's all I've really watched this week. All right. Well, so short, we slacked off this week. But you know,
that was a short week.
We both watched a lot of stuff last week. So a little bit of news to talk about then before. There's been this on-again, off-again Spawn reboot has been talked about for a few years now. You know, at one point, McFarlane was going to direct it himself with James Fox starring, which I thought was bizarre. I'm like, McFarlane, mad respect for you and your artwork and stuff, but you're not a movie director. You know?
No.
But I didn't realize that this has now been shot to Blumhouse Pictures, and Jason Blumhouse and his company intend to make a Spawn reboot, and they want to have it out by the year 2025. I think that's good news. I mean, I'm not a huge horror guy like you, but I know Blumhouse has a hell of a good record.
They do.
With the things they've done. And they don't do just horror. They have their A24 section of films as well, which, you know, I think is Blumhouse A24 also? Maybe I'm wrong on that.
I need to look. I told you, I could be lying.
Yeah, but Blumhouse, you know, Spawn might be in good hands. But I think at one point it was Jamie Foxx as Al Simmons, and they wanted Jeremy Renner to play, you know, Twitch and stuff. And but I think they've moved past that. I'm sure they're probably going to go younger at this point, because if they want to franchise it, you know, they're going to go a little different direction.
Michael B. Jordan. I think you could go Michael B. Jordan.
Really?
He's getting older, but he's still young enough to where you could do Spawn for a while with him.
True. I mean, I just want it to be good. You know, that's my thing. I hope they make a good Spawn movie, because we just covered the old 1997 one recently. And while it's a fun watch, it's not good. You know?
Yeah.
So it's time for a good Spawn movie. So hopefully over there at Blumhouse, they are able to do so. Big news this week. We know who's playing Superman and Lois Lane in Superman Legacy. James Gunn's reboot of the DC Universe, which is coming out in the year, in the year 2025, as with Superman Legacy. James has written the script and is also going to direct it. And our Superman Clark Kent is going to be David Corenswet. I guess that's how you say it. Corenswet.
Yeah, Corenswet.
You know, don't know a lot about this guy. My first thought is I thought Gunn was going to go younger, but he's actually about a year and a half or so older than Cavill was even when he was cast.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Now, strangely, they do look a lot alike. But, you know, you could put Ralph and Cavill and Reeve and everyone next to each other, and there's always a similar look for Clark Kent. So that doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
I hope he can pull it off, and people are already making comments about how he needs to bulk up. Well, go look at the images of Cavill when he first did some costume fitting. He was pretty skinny, and he bulked up just fine. That's why these guys are celebrities and actors and have trainers to do all that. We would look like that every day if we didn't have to work. It could just train all the time.
Exactly. If you got a trainer that is like, yeah, every time you try and drive through an In-N-Out drive through, they smack it out of your hand and hand you a plate right. of broccoli and tell you to, lift these dumbbells 50 times, then right. yeah, you're going to look like that too. Yeah. Eat your broccoli.
And, he made some comments about he wants his Superman to be a Superman of hope and optimism, which is basically what James Gunn has said. So I guess they're telling him what to say in the media. This is why I really, everyone complained about Brandon Routh's Superman Returns and how that version of Clark was kind of mopey. But man, James Gunn's version kind of sounds like it might be mopey, too. I just can't help but think it. I hope there's some fucking action in the Superman movie. One thing I appreciate about Man of Steel is it's loaded with action.
For real, man. They started with a really good villain, so hopefully they start off with a strong enough villain that's going to make it to where, we can get that action again. Hopefully it's not like a terrorist trying to take ransom, and then Superman just goes in there and tanks them all, and he's not even met with a challenge or something like that. Saves people from an earthquake. That would be my fear, that he tries to go like too campy, like too retro.
Reeves yeah. saved people from the earthquake. Come on. That's not
I know, bad. But it worked for that time. I think now you need a little bit more of that action. There needs to be some combat. Maybe a giant spider. Huh?
Oh, Lord. Our Lois Lane is going to be Rachel Brosnahan. Brosnahan, I guess?
Brosnahan. She looks familiar.
I only know her from her Netflix show, which I only watched in passing, and I remember her being good in that. She looks more the Margot Kidder Lois Lane, I think. But I really like Rachel McAdams Lois Lane, but she seems to fit more of a retro vibe to her, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't only think that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton about her either, but she looks the part, and. And one thing about Gunn is, despite my thoughts on how he might play the DCU, is that at least his casting's always pretty solid.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought David Bautista would have made a great Drax, and he did, So, I mean, I trust him when it comes to that. So I think he did a good job picking the actors. I also like the fact – I do like the fact that we're not going to get a Superman origin. It's going to be straight into it. In fact, the Authority already exists in this universe too, and in some ways, when he said that, I think he was hinting at us seeing the Authority in Superman Legacy, just by those comments saying that they already exist in this world. So
that would be neat.
We do know Lex is in the movie, because there has been, it's pretty much confirmed there's actors testing for Lex. So there is going to be some version of Lex Luthor in the movie. And is he the main bad guy? We don't know. But I mean, he's definitely in the film from what they're saying about casting and stuff. So, we'll know more soon, but got a couple of years till it comes out, till we get this new DCU. So, and then last bit of news, some conflicting information this week. You have an artist over here running his mouth saying there's no way Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse is done by March. There's no way. He says this movie's going to get pushed back maybe a year, maybe 2 years. Then you got a conflicting report from a Sony, supposedly Sony email, saying Beyond the Spider-Verse was coming out in 2026. Then you had another email from Amy Pascal, the producer of Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, who basically said, no one knows anything. As far as we know, the movie's still coming out in March, but she never confirmed it was coming out in March. She just kind of said, we're working our hardest to get the film done. A lot goes into this. And but if you read between lines or email, sounds like we might have to wait a little bit longer for Beyond the Universe.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have to wait 2 years longer, but it feels like, yeah, maybe it's not going to make it out by March.
I mean, it took them 4 years to animate that spider chase in the movie. Right. So it's like, if there is any scene comparable to that, which you'd have to say, logically speaking, they're going to have something comparable to, like,
Remember though, Matt, this movie was supposed to be out 2 years ago. So the movie, even though the producer said they were working on the film all the way up till its release, originally it was supposed to be out and they kept getting pushed back. So they've been working on Beyond the Spider-Verse for a while as well. So
that's true.
So hopefully we don't have to wait too much longer to see what happens after that incredible cliffhanger.
I'll accept a couple months, but anything longer than that, I'm going to be pissed off. Want to see it, man.
I know.
See how it ends.
At least as of now, I know we're fixing getting a Ghost Protocol. At least as of now, we know Dead Reckoning, which comes out next in a couple weeks, about a week and a half. At least we know Part 2, as of now, is still only a year away. That it should be completed and out on time next summer. Even though the early reviews I've read of Dead Reckoning say it is a complete film. Like, you know, there's no major cliffhanger, but yet there's threads that are left for Part 2. At least we're not going to be on the edge of it. Well, we'll be on our edge of our seats, just not at the end of the film.
Not like a total cliffhanger.
But let's get into the feature film then, because we already gave away what it is, and if you're listening, you know, and it's a Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is the fourth entry in the franchise, and I think this is also the entry where it went from being this is the one that brought in the big set pieces. They started, Paramount Pictures started believing in the franchise at this point and started basically spending more money, trusting in Tom Cruise. And they brought in Brad Bird, who directed The Incredibles, to do his first live action film. They brought in, this is his first time. Chris McQuarrie does not have a writing credit on this, but he was brought in to do some rewrites. And it began a wonderful friendship with McQuarrie. He went on to direct the next three films in the franchise after this. And they brought Jeremy Renner into this film, who basically lobbied himself to get a role in the movie, because Renner wanted to be in Mission Impossible and wanted to work with Tom Cruise. And Tom found that out and made sure he found a role for him in the movie. And now they've become really good friends to this day. 12, 13 years later, him and Tom have developed a wonderful friendship together because of this movie. This is the movie that I think breaks the mold, because we start getting seeds to bigger things in this film that lead to Rogue Nation and to Fallout after this.
And some more realistic action scenes and with the tech and everything. Stuff doesn't always work the way it's supposed to, you know?
It's all done on purpose. Brad Bird wanted to be a running gag that the entire film, the gadgets don't work. All the way up to the end of the film, the gadgets never work.
I thought this was like just a more realistic take, you know. Yeah. Oh man, these damn prototype gloves, they just don't work.
No, Brad, in production, Brad Bird was like, you know, what if everything malfunctions and you just have to improvise? And it became a running gag. And Tom Cruise thought it was a great idea, so he's like, yeah, let's do that.
Wow, that's funny, man. Well, shit, it works.
Summarize this one, man.
Yeah. So at the beginning, they break Ethan out of prison. And it's because another agent has been killed by James Bond's girlfriend. So, of course, they have to break Ethan Hunt out of, I forget her name, but, you know, she's No Time to Die, Spectre, James Bond's baby mama. She kills an agent. Ethan Hunt's broken out because she's got some launch codes. So their mission, if he chooses to accept it, of course, is to go with Simon Pegg and this saucy little side piece that is tagging along to the Kremlin to steal some information by use of some cool gadgets like a fake wall. But they are intercepted by another agent who is working for himself, a Russian defector who wants these codes so that he can basically have the same plot as number two, bring about the destruction of the world, but through a huge explosion, not a
nuclear wars have poison.
So he acts like he's part of the team. The Kremlin gets blown up. IMF is blamed for it. And so, secretary basically says, hey, nothing is sanctioned unless you do it unsanctioned over there on a train with all of your gadgets. So they're like, all right, we've got to clear our name of this horrible thing, thinking we blew up the Kremlin. And they've got to bring this other man whose name is Hendrix. And they find out it's Hendrix because Tom Cruise is like, wait, let me draw this picture on my hand really quick and then show it to you, Jeremy Renner. And Jeremy Renner's like, I don't know, looks kind of weird, but by your, by the cheekbones and shit, it looks like Hendrix. Who's Hendrix? Hendrix is a defector. So they go on and plan to intercept Hendrix by taking half the team and getting the launch codes from James Bond's girlfriend and who's an assassin, and getting the diamonds from the Russian guy and swapping both through use of this briefcase that prints out the launch codes as Jeremy Renner's taking pictures of it with his eye. So they're actually giving the launch codes to Hendrix because he's got someone with them that can decrypt them instantly, or authenticate them instantly. So they've got to use the real thing. So it's a big, big bankroll. They lose Hendrix in this big sandstorm, and then it all leads up to the end where Hendrix launches the missile, and they've got to try and get the briefcase now to stop the missile from actually detonating, just basically kill it in the air so it falls as just a dud. And it's pretty intense, actually in multiple parts of the film, but really, really at the end when they're trying to stop a nuke that's already in the air. So it's pretty damn crazy. So, they're trying to clear their name and hopefully the world doesn't get blown up in the meantime, which I don't get. Why does he want to destroy the world? You can't enjoy that. You're like, okay, everybody's dead. What happens?
Cause he's evil.
Yeah. Why can't he be like a 007 villain and just, ask for $1 billion, Okay. It makes more sense. Sure, it's cliche, but we get it,
Right. Oh, your summaries are always amusing. So this film, you're right. This film has an intensity about throughout the film from it's got some great humor in it too, where, he tells when they're in the biggest building in the world in Dubai.
Yes.
He's like, well, you got to go to the server room. He's like, well, who's going to do it? And Benji's like, well, I've got to be on the computer. I'm just going to sit here.
I'm the computer guy.
And then Brant's like, I'm just the analyst.
I'm the help.
Yeah. Ethan's like, oh, okay. So he has to use these devices to climb this window, which is virtually impossible, but it makes
Spider-Man gloves.
Yeah. It makes such an incredible sequence though. And he almost falls a couple of times. He gets up there and he breaks into the window and then the gloves aren't working, so he's like, how do I get out of here? And he ties himself to a fire hose. And
a la Die Hard. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw John McClane do this.
Then he tells him, then Brant's like, I don't think your rope's long enough. And he's like, no shit. There's a really good little humor in the whole Dubai sequence, I think, in this that works really well. And Cruz pulls off a death-defying jump into the other window, which, much has been made about that stunt, and
yes,
he was tied to wires. The insurance agencies, that was one stunt they weren't going to let him do.
Yeah.
He was on safety harnesses.
He was 1,700 feet up in the air. They're not going to let him.
No, they actually shot it from only like 150 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, the floor he was on would have been at 1,700 feet. Yeah.
Yeah. They shot it from about 150 feet up, which is still high.
Yeah. That's, yeah. You ain't going to live if you fall from that.
Yeah. Yeah. They shot it from about 150 feet up and then used camera tricks and everything to make it look like he's 1700 feet up in the air. But it's an awesome sequence. And
yeah,
that's one thing I noticed about Ghost Protocol. You know, in MI1, you get the big train sequence at the end, but it's pretty much a low-key action film. Mm-hmm. MI2, you get the stylish action of John Woo, you know, but there's no huge set pieces. It's more chases and gunfights. In J.J. Abrams' MI3, you get some set pieces like the bridge shootout and a couple things. But this movie goes bigger, no doubt, from the Dubai sequence, the sandstorm, to the big chase at the end and the drop in the car from 100 feet and all that. It's definitely this is the movie I think that took in Mission Impossible to be smaller, tighter missions to definitely much bigger scopes. And Tom wanted that. The producers wanted that. Tom was like, how do we make Mission Impossible big and bigger and better? And this is the first movie in the franchise to do that, to go bigger, I think, and go better. And it started a trend of three really great films in a row. And this starts all with Ghost Protocol. And then I love the fact that the Mission Impossible films have never been afraid to be risky. I mean, you blow up the Kremlin in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's huge. And it's even mentioned in Rogue Nation that still happens. So they don't ignore it. Sometimes these franchises like Transformers, these big action franchises will ignore previous events, but Mission Impossible has always treated them like these things really happen. And to be fair, the MCU's done a good job with that. Like, you know, with some stuff that they did mention that happened in the past.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's ballsy. You blew up the freaking Kremlin at the beginning of this film.
Hell yeah, dude. And I think it's cool that Tom Cruise was able to kind of do all of his own stunts on the, on that building, because it allowed the director to shoot from multiple angles and it looks really good. And that's another thing, you know, just the camera work that they were able to do, because, you know, Cruise is always pushing himself to do his own stunts. You know, the film looks good because of that part, you know, his acting.
I don't like heights. And when the camera angle comes over and it looks down from that building,
even yes.
when I see you at home, I'm like, oh shit. That looks
scary. Yeah. And then his little man, what shirt is he wearing? He's wearing some Bruce Springsteen shirt whenever he flips the jacket inside out. It's really cool how he goes from, you know, Russian general to American tourist, but it doesn't fool that one Russian detective that is like, I will capture you, Senor Cruz. And he's at the edge of the building and I thought he was going to crawl back into that window whenever I first saw this movie and just give himself up to the Russian government. But he waits until a tour bus drives by and just, you know, basically tumbles onto a tour bus and falls on his ass to get off the building alive. Pretty darn cool. Just him avoiding him. And then the party scene with the Indian, the rich Indian guy. He's like, you know, crossing the Russian detective's path. And it's funny, whenever he finally sees him at the end, you know, he understands that, you know, he's a good guy. You know, because of everything.
And, of course, you can't talk about this movie without another famous Tom Cruise running scene. You know?
Yes.
He runs at the end of part three where he's running down the street to save his wife in time. And this one, he runs literally into a sandstorm chasing the Russian defector.
He runs hard, too.
He runs hard and he runs far. I'm like, I mean, he just... The one screen events make it feel like it's had to be a mile and a half as much as he runs into sand.
For he's real, grabbing, man.
He's grabbing clothing off these clotheslines as he's going to try to protect his mouth. And I'm like,
he goes any harder, he's going to break the speed force and he's going to end up in a Minority Report in a chromosphere, you know, looking at his life through multiple universes.
And it's cool. I was reading, they had to shoot that a certain way because when the sand that they used for the sequence came out looking just red on screen. So they had to use a different frame rate to make the sand look different. If I remember
right. Okay.
It was looking wrong. It didn't look like sand. So they had to do something to make it look different. And, And it is a practical effect. They use sand machines and stuff to try to make it look as realistic as possible.
I want to say there's a James Bond movie. One of the Daniel Craig James Bond movies has a big sandstorm in it, doesn't it? And there he's trying to drive against it. Is it the Skyfall or Quantum of Solace? Maybe it's Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace.
Yeah,
I don't remember. But yes, and then after he runs hard, he almost gets ran over by a car, and the car flips over him, and you know, and the bad guy escaped at that point in the movie.
It's the only time someone uses a face mask, and it's not Ethan Hunt, because his malfunctioned. It looked like a friggin' Homer Simpson's makeup gun, if you know your Simpsons episodes, when Homer Simpson decides to make that makeup shotgun as an invention, and he tests it out on a dummy, and it comes out looking like Krusty the Clown. Those masks looked like they were pretty bulbous and over-makeuped and stuff in the film. Another funny, you know, piece of hilarious scenery. But gets away in the sandstorm. Same actor, by the way. We didn't mention it. Same actor, by the way, who played the bad guy in John Wick, the first John Wick movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was the crime boss whose son went into John Wick's home, killed his dog, stole his car, and then he calls John Leguizamo's character, and he's like, "Why did you slap my son?" Same guy. I know he's in something else. There's a couple actors that are in a couple different things. I know Galloway, that actor was in Lost. I know you're a big Lost fan. Of course, Simon Pegg is back. Jeremy Renner's back. You know, Jeremy Renner's first appearance in a Mission Impossible film, which I, you know, didn't realize at the time that they had casted Renner as a possible replacement for Ethan Hunt, if Tom Cruise ever decided to give up. So I guess Renner is, you know, at the time was cast to possibly replace Cruise if Cruise didn't want to do this anymore, which makes sense because that drop on the line where he has to sprawl out just like in Mission Impossible 1 almost looked like a rite of passage, you know.
Yeah, and makes sense. I mean, because, you know, at some point, Cruise is 61. He's going to have to stop. Well, he says Dead Reckoning's it after part one, part two. That's it. But this franchise has been so successful for Paramount. I do think that they'll try to continue on with other actors at some point because, you know.
Have to.
I mean, and that's okay. I think Ethan Hunt is a very important character, but I don't think it's designed a little different than an iconic character like Indiana Jones or something. I think you can tell more Mission Impossible stories with other agents. You
know, yeah,
and I think that's okay. And who's to say Tom wouldn't come back in a role as he gets older as a mentor role, you know, in the movies?
Yeah, become the secretary or something like that. You know, get into that kind of a role. You know.
Yeah. But the pattern I noticed watching these movies recently, and watching Rogue Nation and stuff, you know, you notice that the Mission Impossible films, like. Not so much the first one, but it kind of started with part two, then part three, and definitely part four, where you have mm-hmm. these major climactic set pieces in the middle of the films. And then the endings are a little more low key. Like John Woo, it's just Ethan versus Doug Ray Scott's character, 1-on-1. Part three, it's a kind of a 1-on-1 fight between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Cruise, and the big sequences in the middle.
Yeah.
With the airplane, the bridge. And same with part four, the big sequences in Dubai and everything in the middle of the film. And the end is kind of a mano a mano fight in this airline or carport place where they sell vehicles. And it's intense because they're trying to start a nuclear weapon. But the climaxes are a little bit more low-key, and they continue in Rogue Nation. I mean, all the big climaxes are in the middle of the film, and then the end is just Solomon
Lane
chasing Ethan Hunt, and they capture him in a box, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
I've noticed that there is kind of a pattern of that with bigger climaxes in the middle of the films.
That's like, I forget which film is the one where of course we find out at the end of this film that his wife isn't actually dead, right. But she was made to be thought dead to expose a mole. And, you know, Renner is not that mole because he thinks she's dead and feels right. bad about her death, feels responsible. But there's a, I forget which movie it is where she's, you know, her testing site, her research site's going to be exploded. Fallout. Yeah. It's a mono wee mono fight at the end with Cruz, yeah, you know, high stakes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, that's a interesting pattern that you've kind of deduced. And every, you know, every secret agent film kind of has its, you know, its formula. You know, you've got the 007 films for a long time. They had their formula. You know, you have a, you know, you've got James Bond. There's a Bond girl. And that Bond girl can be good or bad or both. You know, it could be two Bond girls in the film. There's always a Q, a person who conveniently gives that person their, you know, their gadgets that they're supposed to use on that mission. Ethan Hunt also gets those gadgets. James Bond gets those gadgets. And James Bond happens to use those gadgets throughout the film. So there's a, you know, there's formulas within these, you know, there's, you know, always a formula with these spy movies. It seems like that just seems to make them tick and helps move them along. And the audience seems to know about it most of the time, but you know, because it's entertaining stuff, we just like, you know, hey, it's cool, man. Just keep giving us the same kind of formula. Just put a different spin on it. And you know, we'll still love you for it, you know, but wouldn't it be funny if you know, the, one of these spies gets the gadgets they're supposed to use on the mission and they never have to use any of it. Like just everything goes smooth. And so they just take it home and they're like, oh yeah, here's the fucking, you know, wrist watch explosive I was supposed to use. Guess I'll just take this home and keep it in my sock drawer.
Yeah, no, you're right though about these. I always liked the spy and espionage genre, and I think there's room for more. You know, from the Bourne Identity films to James Bond and Mission Impossibles. I mean, there's been some really good franchises, and it's a good genre. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just point blank. These are the type of movies. That's why you go to the movies, because they're always highly entertaining. You know, they tell good stories. They're big thrilling moments. They're sometimes very scary real world scenarios. But that's why we go to these movies, to watch our heroes save the day, whether it's Ethan Hunt or Jason Bourne or, you know, or James Bond.
Exactly. And the role of a secret agent is like a, you know, a boy's, you know, dream, you know, from whenever he's little all the way up until we're adults, you know. Oh man, wouldn't it be cool to be a secret agent? Hell, Arnold wanted to be a secret agent in Total Recall, you know? Right. So it's like what guy doesn't want to have a scenario where he gets the girl, saves the day, saves the planet, becomes the hero. It's a fantasy for us, you know, and we're going to come and see it every time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, man, it's hard to believe this franchise is almost 25 years old. I mean, 1996 is the first one came out.
Yeah.
It took almost 5 years to get the sequel made. I mean, part two was like 2001, you know, so the franchise got off a bit rocky, and not because they weren't successful or anything. It's just, you know, it was just the way it kind of worked, you know, at the time. It took a bit, you know, a lot of movies come out every 2 or 3 years from their franchises. There's been a little more gaps between these, but to be fair, like Dead Reckoning comes out the 12th. It was supposed to be out almost 2 years ago. It was originally a 2021 release. I
mean, yeah, that's right.
But COVID has caused a lot of setbacks.
A lot of delays, man.
As we know with all these films. And it's hard to believe that we're still getting movies like Dead Reckoning that were supposed to have already been out.
Yeah.
They're just now coming out because of COVID things. And then Mission Impossible became a victim of Top Gun getting pushed back, because the movie was ready. It could have came out last year, but Paramount didn't want to put out Maverick and Dead Reckoning the same year.
So, I wouldn't want to put anything up against Maverick, man. That's a death wish.
And the early reviews of Dead Reckoning are saying it's on Fallout level, so it's just as good as Fallout. And Fallout's considered, you know, the best of the franchise, one of the best action figures of the last decade, or action movies,
yeah.
And early reviews of Fallout are ranking it right up there as just as good. So, you know, I'm excited to see it. I mean, I realize it was a Wednesday release, even though I'll probably wait till that weekend to go see it.
Yeah, I saw that. I think you can actually see it Tuesday. But I think the earliest I can see it is Wednesday, actually. So I'll definitely go out and see it Wednesday.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours and 40 minutes, this
new one. So oof, yeah.
But it's going to be good. I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. But I've enjoyed this franchise a lot. And then thank you, Mr. Tom Cruise, even though I know you're our podcast, for giving us this and just for giving us highly entertaining movies over your career. And happy birthday, Mr. Tom Cruise.
Yes, happy birthday, dude.
Yeah. And but before we get out of here, let's talk about next week's film, man. We're going to do another theatrical release, and it comes out this weekend in theaters. And so some of you may have already seen it, and I will have seen it by the time y'all get this episode released. And that is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Well, in that case, what are we drinking?
Same for the goddaughter.
Dad told me you found something on a train during the war. A dial that could change the course of history.
Why are you chasing the thing that drove your father crazy?
Don't move.
We need to get out of here.
Stop!
Sorry.
Helena!
Dr. Jones, get him.
Hitler made mistakes, and with this, I will correct them all.
You stole it.
Then you stole it.
And then I stole it. It's called capitalism.
This way!
Fasten your seatbelt. There might be some turbulence.
You've taken your chances, made your mistakes, and now a final triumph.
Indiana Jones.
A few times in my life I've seen things.
I've been tortured with voodoo. Been shot 9 times. Including once by your father.
Sorry.
But I've been looking for this all my life.
You know, we don't do theatrical releases real often, but we did with The Flash. And sometimes there's just movies that you got to do. And we got to give Indiana his final swan song. It's appropriate.
Going away party, his final bout. I mean, they're already talking about how there could be a female Indiana Jones to carry on the franchise. So, you know, that he's, you know, it's his final bout.
Yeah. But I'm excited to see. It's one of those movies I'm not even paying attention to the reviews. Some of the fan reviews are starting to hit, and it seems like most fans are enjoying it. I mean, they're saying it's not their favorite, but it's hard to ever top Raiders or Temple or Last
Crusade
originals. But most fans are enjoying it, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go enjoy it and have a good time watching it, and it'll be like revisiting an old friend because it's one of my favorite.
Go on an adventure, man.
Pop culture characters ever created. So, you know, I'm excited to see it. So that'll be next week on the show. We'll talk Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yes.
But until then, this is the Rebel Radio Podcast. And go to therebelradiopodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. But until next week, continue to stay safe. And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Until next time, as always, remember, just go there.
Just go there and do it.